This is a weekly summary of news about women and women's issues and from women's perspectives, which comes to you from the weekly Cheers and Jeers column of the Women's E! News. I'm Nancy Casey. First, the good news. Cheers for the New York Times Magazine, which devoted its August 23rd issue to Saving the World's Women. Among the essays championing this subject were Nicholas D. Kristof and Cheryl Wu Dunn's The Women's Crusade, an excerpt from their forthcoming book, Half the Sky, Turning Oppression into Opportunity for Women Worldwide. This husband and wife reporting team argues that females hold the key to eradicating poverty and extremism. They tell the story of Saima Muhammad, a Pakistani woman who went from battered wife to successful entrepreneur with the help of a microfinance organization. Meanwhile, Dexter Filkins chronicled Afghan girls pursuing an education in a school bus for Shamsia. He cited the gains from banishment in 2001 to an enrollment of more than 2 million 8 years later, as well as the risk that these girls face in the name of learning. Gerald Marzorati said in his editor's letter that focusing on this cause was an opportunity to shed light not just on the obstacles, but on overcoming them. Cheers for the fact that J.C. Lee Dugard was reunited with her family in Concord, California on August 27th, 18 years after a registered sex offender abducted her as she walked to a school bus stop in South Lake Tahoe, California. Her stepfather, Carl Probin, told CBS's early show on August 28th that her family members met with Dugard, who is now 29, and the two daughters that she bore with suspect Philip Garrido, as well as her mother, Terry Probin, and her younger sister, Shayna. "She sounds like she's okay," Probin said in a separate interview with ABC News. He added, quote, "I hope she's been well treated this entire 18 years," unquote. During that time, she endured living in an elaborate backyard compound of sheds, tents, and outbuildings with rudimentary camp-like bath facilities and power being supplied by electrical cord. Garrido and his wife, Nancy Garrido of Antioch, California, now face kidnapping and rape charges. And cheers for a prominent priest whose support for women's ordination has him in trouble with the Catholic Church, who ratcheted up his confrontation with the hierarchy on August 23rd when he called the church's refusal to ordain women, quote, a spiritual assassination. Reverend Roy Bourgeois of Weston, Massachusetts, told the Boston Globe that he finds solace in knowing that he's not the only priest who wants women to play a bigger role in practicing the faith. He said, quote, "If they choose to kick me out of the church because I believe that men and women are equal, so be it. I will never be at peace being in any organization that would exclude others," unquote. Bourgeois is the first Catholic priest in good standing to participate in an unsanctioned ordination ceremony held by advocates of women's ordination. As a result, his status remains unclear because he has had no formal communication from his order, the Marinal Fathers, or from the Vatican, which last fall told him he would face excommunication if he did not recant his position. We cheer the Connecticut General Assembly's Permanent Commission on the Status of Women, which called upon Congress on August 24th to ratify the United Nations Treaty to Eliminate Discrimination Against Women. Considered an international women's bill of rights, the UN Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Discrimination Against Women, or CEDAW, was adopted by the UN General Assembly in 1979. The United States remains one of only 8 countries that have yet to endorse the accord. Countries that accept CEDAW agree to incorporate into their legal system the principle that men and women are equal, abolish discriminatory laws, write into law measures to prohibit gender discrimination and ensure equal access for women to political service, representation, education, employment, and health. The Connecticut Commission's Executive Director Teresa C. Younger said in a press statement, quote, "Failure to ratify is inconsistent with U.S. foreign policy, which recognizes many human rights treaties, including those concerning genocide, racism, torture, and child labor. Civil societies around the world have reached consensus on CEDAW, and it's high time America did too," unquote. Cheers for the 50 companies cited by Latina Magazine in its Latina Style 50 report for 2009. This report names healthcare provider Kaiser Permanente Company of the Year. Now in its 12th year, this annual evaluation lists the 50 best companies for Latinas to work for in the United States and sets the standard for identifying corporations that provide the best career opportunities. Access to mentoring programs, alternative work policies, dependent and child care support, employee benefits, job retraining, affinity groups, and Hispanic relations are among the areas assessed by the magazine. Latina Style President and CEO Robert E. Bard said in a press statement, quote, Latina's climb to the upper echelons of the corporate ladder has been severely impaired by the harsh economic conditions in today's market. Their lack of seniority has put them at a disproportionate disadvantage in the implementation of retention efforts, unquote. Bard added, quote, We commend the companies that, in spite of the economic and market pressures, have made significant efforts to maintain or even increase Latina representation in their upper ranks. And now for the bad news. Jeers for the president of Mali, who announced on August 27th that he would not sign the country's new family law that gives greater rights to women, and instead he sent the law back to parliament for review. Amadou Toumani Touré, who supports the statute, told BBC News that he's taking this course of action for the sake of national unity. Muslim groups have been protesting the law ever since Parliament adopted it earlier this month, calling it the work of the devil and against their religion. One provision that was deemed controversial is for women to no longer be required to obey their husbands. Instead, husbands and wives owe each other, quote, loyalty and protection, unquote. Other stipulations included women obtaining greater inheritance rights and raising the minimum age for girls to marry, in most circumstances, to 18 years old. And jeers for the results of a report into domestic abuse and gender conducted by Bristol University in England. They found that while men are responsible for most cases of domestic violence, women are three times more likely to be arrested for such incidents. The study also found that the majority of cases involved alcohol misuse, that children were present, and women were more likely to use a weapon to protect themselves. Marianne Hester, a professor of public policy studies, told The Guardian on August 28th that the research, which tracked 96 cases from 2001 to 2007, looked at 32 cases where men were the aggressors, 32 cases where women were the antagonists, and 32 cases where it was both partners. It found that 48% of these cases were related to couples still in a relationship, 28% involved violence after separation, and the rest involved couples in the process of splitting up. Both men and women can be violent, but there are significant differences in the way men and women use violence and abuse against their partners, and also the impact of such behavior. This needs to be taken into account if we want to ensure greater safety for individuals, Hester said. And we are sad to report the results of a study by the National Women's Law Center and the Mexican American Legal Defense and Educational Fund, which was released on August 27th, and highlights how Latina students face greater challenges in graduating from high school than many of their counterparts. Recent data from the Editorial Projects and Education Research Center indicate that 41% of Hispanic female students do not graduate from high school in 4 years. These students also have the highest teen pregnancy and birth rates of any subgroup of young people in the United States, with 53% becoming pregnant before they reach age 20. The Law Center's co-president, Marcia D. Greenberger, said, quote, women who drop out face a lifetime of lower earnings and higher rates of unemployment. Not only that, but children of women who drop out are more likely to drop out themselves, thereby repeating the cycle, unquote. To reverse this trend, the Mexican-American Fund attorney Veronica Rivera proposed more mentoring opportunities and parental involvement as tools to help them overcome the socioeconomic barriers that hinder their pursuit of higher education. And jeers to AT&T. The Equal Employment Opportunity Commission filed a lawsuit against AT&T on August 20th, alleging that the telecommunications giant is discriminating against older workers. The centerpiece of the lawsuit is the charge that AT&T won't rehire workers who previously retired from the company. Louis Graziano, an EEOC attorney working on the case, said, quote, "To deny you the opportunity to work again doesn't make any sense, particularly if you had experience." Graziano added that the company hasn't offered any legitimate reason for the policy. AT&T had been named Company of the Year in 2008 by Latina Style magazine for its, quote, "remarkable and consistent strength in the area of diversity," unquote. And jeers to the New York City Fire Department hiring exams and Mayor Michael Bloomberg, who defended them. Bloomberg gave a 3-hour deposition in connection with a federal lawsuit on August 26 about racial discrimination in the New York Fire Department's hiring exams, and the mayor insisted that the exams were equitable. These exams, conducted in 1999 and 2002, were slammed by a federal judge in June for not testing job-related skills and excluding at least 1,000 blacks and Latinos from jobs with the agency. According to the New York Daily News, the lawsuit seeks hiring and back pay for candidates who were unfairly excluded, a move that could cost the city $20 million. Darius Charney, an attorney for the Center for Constitutional Rights, said, quote, "We would love to work together with the city and come to a collaborative solution, but if the mayor's attitude remains like it was today at the hearing, we fear it will be difficult," unquote. And today we note that dozens of semi-nude women gave jaded New Yorkers and wide-eyed tourists alike an eyeful on August 23rd when they revealed their breasts in Central Park and then marched through the streets to Columbus Circle. The display was part of National Go Topless Day, during which organizers gathered signatures for a petition asking Congress to relax nudity laws. Ramona Santarelli, a speaker at the rally, said, quote, "It's not about bearing your breasts, but the true meaning is to normalize women's bodies," unquote. New York is the only state in the country where women can legally go topless after a 1992 ruling in the state's highest court, which said that any woman can walk around the city at any time with no shirt on. This report was compiled by the staff of the Women's E! News. Rita Henley Jensen is the editor-in-chief. This audio production of Women's E! News was produced in the studios of KRFP in Moscow, Idaho, and brought to you by VP Foundation and Yin Radio, which you can find on the web at vpfound.org. Background music is by Joan Hickey. The text of this broadcast and more news about women can be found at the Women's E! News website, womensenews.org. For Yin Radio and KRFP, I'm Nancy Casey.